Hey guys, it's Kevin. Before we get started, I just want to let you know that this episode would be considered explicit, so do not listen to it with the kids around. And also, if you can go to theficcast.com through the show notes and purchase the book through there, you'd really be helping us out. We got some really high bandwidth costs now. That's pretty making things a little bit more difficult to do the show on a regular basis. So if you can support the show by ordering the book through theficcast.com show notes, that would be huge, and I'd really appreciate it. Thanks, guys, and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee and I got two very, very special guests with me this week. The first timer I'm going to talk about first, and that's Adam Bornstein, and you've probably seen him in Men's Health, and he's been kind of all over the place. He writes quite a bit, and probably hopefully seeing him on Facebook and Twitter as well. Adam, what's up?
I'm happy to be here. I can't believe I've actually never been on your show. It's kind of embarrassing.
We talked about it.
For about 3 years, I think we've been doing this waltz, this song and dance. I've been slow playing it. You can see that this was my strategy when I dated women, and I've had the same success, I think, dating women that I did getting on your show. So finally, you know, kind of came through.
Great. Well, you know, you're finally on. So along with you is a perennial guest on the show, John Romanello. John.
Thanks for having me. Always good to be back, especially fun this time. It's nice that we got this little three-way going. Always happy to be involved in anything with both of you guys. So it's really, really a pleasure. I hope we manage not to embarrass ourselves too bad this time.
Well, I got to start taking a look at the numbers, but I think you may have been on the show more than anyone else.
Really?
Wow. At this point, I think you've passed the we've had a couple of people that have been on a lot, like Barardi's been on a lot, like four times, but I think this is your fifth time coming on.
I think this is five. Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. I love to hear that.
So we'll start putting together some kind of, like, you know, the SNL Five Timers Club. I'll do the same thing for the podcast, although it's not nearly as exciting. But I mean, first thing that we got to talk about is that you guys, the reason why we're having you both on at the same time is you do have a new book coming out, Man 2.0, Engineering the Alpha. I need to kind of use that as a jumping off point. And if you guys could kind of talk about, Adam, we'll start with you. But how did this project come about, and kind of what was the, you know, the goal? What was the message that you're trying to get across with the project?
This book is many, many years in the making, so it's kind of exciting that we're finally getting to this point, because I think, you know, I've known Roman for about 5 years, and our relationship started with him stalking me while I was at Men's Health, which really is as wonderful as it sounds. And, you know, we've always had several ideas that we tossed around, and John had this great idea for a book. And I really just wanted to do a little bit more legwork in terms of seeing if there was some research behind to support it, what we could do to kind of help men. And really, more than anything, we wanted to create a book that first and foremost covered a lot of topics that aren't being talked about, because a lot of books really cover the same thing. And at the same time, we wanted to go about it in a way that was different than most fitness books. So we identified a topic of hormones and fitness, but really kind of wanted to push it through a lifestyle lens of what are the problems that are really facing men? How can we attack those problems and actually provide people with a blueprint to live a better life, or as we discuss it, live in an unreal life? And the result is something that it kind of achieved all of those goals. We're definitely going to touch on a lot of topics that you don't see in any fitness books. And we call out a lot of people, which, for better or for worse, is really important, because there are a lot of myths, there are a lot of mistruths, and we don't hold back at all with anything we do, so much so that the profanity in the book is quite prevalent, and so much so that we did have to cut it down. Our publisher said that we had a little bit too much profanity, so at some point we did have to scale back just a bit.
But John, I think I saw that you added in some extra F-bombs just to season it up a little bit for the audio version.
Yeah, the audio version, there was no one there to sort of pull back on the reins. And, you know, we were really actually fortunate. We did we did the audiobook in New York City, and we had this director, Zane, who is the same audio director who worked with Gary Vaynerchuk his audiobook Crush It. And, you know, I love Gary, and he's a good friend of mine and a client as well. And so once I heard that, I was like, all right, this guy will kind of let me – because I've heard Gary's audiobook. It's one of the few audiobooks that I really enjoyed listening to over the past year or so. And so I decided if it was good enough for Gary, it would work for me. And I did not hold back. I mean, I didn't – it wasn't overly pervasive. I certainly wasn't doing it for effect, but – if there were times where I felt like the audio delivery would be helped by an F-bomb, I would not hold back from dropping it. Whereas, you know, maybe in the book we would have done that. Because I believe that the advantage of the audiobook is inflection and tonality, intonation, and you can sort of like get the point across. I do think that maybe I'm going to move away a little bit from dropping as many F-bombs in my writing and really like hold them back for when they'll have maximum effect, because I think that what I'm seeing the more I do videos and the more I have like sort of speaking engagements, the difference in how those things are perceived audially versus you know, textographically, I guess we'll say. And I think that there is a difference. So one thing I did want to point out is Adam mentioned that we gave people a lot of shit. We had some call outs in the book. Which is true. You know, there's a lot of like bullshit in the industry. And, you know, in my career, I've never been like a call out kind of guy. So you know, we sort of like just mentioned certain things that are not true and stayed away from people. But as much as we did that, we're also really compelled to show love. And, you know, there's a lot of people in a blog post. You know, if you get an idea for someone, you can just like link back to their site, whereas that's harder to do in a book. And so what we did was we had a lot of footnotes and a lot of places specifically where we were like, okay, well, we were talking about fasting and we, you know, we tipped our hat to Martin Birkin and Brad Pilon, or when we talked about like selective hypertrophy, we talked about Brett Contreras and gave him a shout out. We gave Ben Bruno a shout out for one of the deficit trap bar deadlifts, which is an episode, an exercise I stole from him. And so it was a really cool opportunity to be writing a book and be able to like, you know, shout out so many of our bros who have taught us so much. And I thought that was like a really, really fun little aspect. I will say that the book is a great book, but above all else, it's fun. It's a really entertaining read. There's a lot of pop culture, a lot of movies, a lot of music, like references, quotes from Fight Club. I think dudes will love it.
Very cool.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been a book and have been involved in a lot of fitness books. There's never been a book written this way. And as Roman said, what was really nice is that, you know, in blog posts, you can shout people out. But when you have a platform like this, a big book, it was nice for us to be able to share and disseminate a lot of ideas, but also pay credit where credit is due and let people know that, you know, what we are is just kind of evolving a lot of ideas and helping spread a lot of knowledge from some of the really great minds that we have in this industry.
One thing I wanted to ask you guys about, and you mentioned having the same producer as Crush It, which is, if anyone hasn't read it, I would even recommend even more so to listen to the audiobook, because one of the cool things that Gary does is, like, he'll sometimes say, all right, this isn't in the book, but he gives you a little bit more extra, you know, side story stuff. Did you guys do anything like that? Did you do any, like, additions to the audiobook or anything that's outside of the written book?
I think there were a few instances where we riffed a little bit more and gave some stuff that wasn't in the book, but, you know, the book itself was like 90,000 words. So we had a lot in there. Yeah. So, you know, thankfully we felt very fortunate to be able to get out a lot of it. Some of the stuff that didn't make it into the book, either for length or because, you know, we couldn't like, you know, we just had a really short turnaround. So there are some hidden chapters, some special chapters, things that were either cut or couldn't get finished in time. And I think that those are the most fun. People are really going to like them. Anyone who buys the book, we're going to give those chapters to, and or at least some of them. And a lot of them have to do with sort of sex and sex drive, and it's important. So I think it's relevant, valuable information.
So on top of that, is this the audio version going to be out day and date as the hard copy?
Adam, do you have any info on that?
I sadly do not know when it'll be available, but I would imagine it'll be right around then, because they rush produced this to try and make sure that it would sync with the April 16th release date.
Okay, perfect. Well, the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and you guys alluded to it, is, you know, this isn't just a book really about training. You know, mentioned you cover, you know, sex drive and things like that. What else can people really expect from the book going into it? John, why don't you start off?
Okay. Well, the way we've been pitching the book and the way we pitched it in our meetings when we were trying to sell the proposal is that we really view this as, quote, a lifestyle guide masquerading as a fitness book. And what that really means is that, you know, we subtitled the book A Real World Guide to an Unreal Life, not an unreal body, not, you know, an unreal training session. We look at the book as sort of a step-by-step blueprint to having an unreal life. And, you know, we believe that when someone goes through a transformation of any kind, whether it is physical or spiritual or emotional or anything like that, it leaves them changed, and not only in the way that they changed. So when you go through a physical transformation, you're a different person, not just because you're 30 pounds lighter or have a bunch more muscle, but because the process of change itself changes you. I really believe, you know, Gary would say, in your DNA. So the main thing is that we are looking at this as sort of a guide to getting better at getting better, and a guide to being more awesome at being awesome. And so we've really outlined the process of the transformative mindset. And what we did was really approached it through what is called the monomyth or the hero's journey. And we take the reader, the client, the subject, through all of the steps of the hero's journey that, you know, you're familiar with if you know Joseph Campbell. But these themes – you're familiar with Campbell even if you've never read him, because these themes are apparent in terms of everything from having this young hero who goes through this journey, this quest, whether it's, you know, Frodo Baggins or Luke Skywalker or King Arthur or Danielson. And there's also a mentor, whether it's Gandalf or Dumbledore or Mr. Miyagi or Obi-Wan. And so we really take the role of the mentor very seriously, and we walk people through all of the different steps of the hero's journey, from crossing the first threshold, going into the belly of the whale, and eventually reaching what's called apotheosis, a moment of sort of godlike clarity and realization. And we are approaching that through the idea of physical mastery. You know, that's the path that we're taking. But again, that can be any path, whether it's a spiritual transformation or journey or an emotional one. And so these tools that you'll learn, the strategies that you will learn for how to look at change and how to create change and how to perpetuate change, these things are transferable. They're portable from one to another. And so we make the argument, if you can change your body this radically, why can't you change your life? Why can't you have – if you can have the body of your dreams, why can't you take those same steps and have the relationship of your dreams or go through those steps in your business life and have the job of your dreams, or create your own dream job and you know, like start a business, all of these things.
Yeah, we also show that, you know, how there's the indirect tie, as we prove at the point that success begets success. We also show directly how, you know, we kind of tapped into, there are certain foundational aspects from a fitness and a health standpoint that when you improve those, you improve, you know, in other aspects of your life. So if you are improving hormonal functioning, or if you are getting in better shape, from a physiological standpoint, you will actually become smarter. You will gain confidence. The way that you can perform in your sex life does improve. So we really tried to scrape away at the problems that stand in guys' life, and not just try and provide a Band-Aid solution. We wanted to understand what was the foundational issue that was causing the problem. How do we attack that directly? And then see the domino effect, if you will, of all the different benefits that occur when you get your body functioning better. And that means body functioning better on all levels, and it means your life functioning better. And it pretty much taps not into the physiological, the physical, but very much as well the psychological and mindset and lifestyle, and really looks at the type of person that you want to be. and draws the fine line between, you know, things like confidence and arrogance, and teaches guys how they can draw that fine line that will teach themselves how to own and live the type of life that they want.
Let's roll off that a little bit and talk about, you know, one of the things that, John, you've been mentioning on your blog and on your website is the idea of kind of downsizing and getting rid of a lot of material things that people really don't need, but we, being in the United States, we're very materialistic people.
Sure.
And kind of how that relates to this, because that's one of the things that I don't know why I did this, but after coming back from Japan the second time, I was like, man, I look around, I got two fucking arcade machines, I have like 400 video games that I never touch. I just got rid of it, and now it's just great because it's not stressing me out to just look at the stuff I don't have time to even use because I'm so busy. Can you talk a little bit about what process people can kind of take and why they, you know, should consider doing it?
Sure. As I said, we quote Fight Club a lot in the book, and so, you know, there's that great quote, you know, we buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like. And I think that we do that because it's sort of culturally ingrained in us to do that. And, you know, breaking away from that is something that I think is really beneficial for a lot of people. And for me, it has been. And, you know, like I'm a bit of a bon vivant. I like nice things, fine things. And I have never shied away from retail therapy. And it's something that I struggled with because, like, I don't really need a lot of shit. And I buy it, or I used to buy it. And the reason for that is – To preface this, I would say that, to give this context, I would say that everyone should watch a great documentary called The Century of the Self, which is it's a documentary by Adam Curtis, which focuses on sort of Sigmund Freud and his nephew, Edward Bernays. And Bernays was sort of the guy who invented the consumerist culture. He, you know, consumerism and commodification and superficiality, these things like come to us because a bunch of people decided that the economy would be better served by, you know, like encouraging people to buy things. And so commercials are very much, you know, these sort of brainwashy ads that are intended to get you to buy shit you don't necessarily need. And some things, obviously, you do need to have things. And, you know, like they're just trying to convince you to buy their product that they think is better. But most demand is manufactured demand. Most desire is manufactured desire. And so I've taken sort of like – I don't not buy things. I just try not to own a lot of things. Like a really like dumb but sort of germane example is t-shirts. Like, I primarily wear t-shirts. That's really, you know, I have a couple of nice button downs for my suits, but like I'm a t-shirt and jeans guy. You know, I've been in the fitness industry for 12 years. I've never had to get dressed for work a day in my life. So I, you know, like I just own a lot of t-shirts, and like I live in a New York City apartment, which sort of forces minimalism on you. And the funny thing is that, like, you know, I have a lot of friends like yourself who work in gyms, or Cressy, who owns a gym, or my friend Dave Delanave, who owns a gym in Minneapolis. And so people send me these t-shirts for their gyms. And, you know, I really appreciate the gesture, but the last thing I need in my life is another t-shirt. And so what I really did was I sort of kept an eye on what I wore and what I didn't. And over a period of about 2 months, I just like got rid of every t-shirt that I didn't wear. If it was like slow in the rotation, then I don't need it. And, you know, a couple of black V-necks, a couple of white V-necks, and then a couple of colorful V-necks is really all I need. And so I really looked at that first as how to just get rid of stuff. My buddy Craig Ballantyne, he's a true minimalist. Like, he is really into owning very few things and traveling with very few things. And so every time he travels, he looks at how many items he brought. And when he gets home, he unpacks and he's like, which one could I have done without? And, you know, I used to be a chronic overpacker where I would, you know, I'd bring like four pairs. I'm a fucking dude. And I would bring four pairs of shoes for a weekend like getaway because, like, what, you know, like you don't know what were you going to do? Whereas now, like, you know, Craig takes one pair of shoes. If I can do it, I take one, but at most I take two. You know, you just like learn to think more versatilely. Like, what item can I buy that will suit me in the greatest number of situations in the best number of possible ways? And I think that like that is just it's just a different mindset, because you don't need the thing. So like I have really been very, very active with getting rid of shit that I don't use or that I don't want to use. Like I don't own a DVD player, and therefore I don't ever have to think about buying DVDs. Everything I watch is streamed, and if it's not streamed, I just won't fucking watch it. Like, and that's like I don't have like all these like consoles clogging up my entertainment center. I've got I like to watch TV, so I have a huge fucking TV. It's a 60-inch TV, and I love it. And like I don't – so again, I'm not against consumerism. I'm not against buying things you want. I'm against having things you don't use. And you know, I gave away my Xbox 360. My friend's broke, and like I haven't fucking turned it on more than twice in 2 years. Please take this. And every now and again, I'm like, I get an urge to play video games, but like, I don't have time for that. I'm writing books. I'm running businesses. So for me, the rule is don't own a lot of things except books. I like to have books. I don't read digital books if I can avoid it. I would prefer to buy a hard copy. Even when I buy an ebook, I like to print it out and read it. I just like to have stuff in my hands. And for me, books are like trophies. When I finish a book, I like to keep it on my shelf to remind me that I conquered it. And so I own a lot of books, but I really am downsizing my clothing. I have this really bad habit of falling in love with leather. And so I have like 9 leather jackets, and I'm trying actively to like give them away or sell them or, you know, like give them charity. Like I just don't need that much shit. And I'm really like trying not to buy it anymore. So that's just really where I'm coming from. A quick sidebar. This is interesting because I tweeted this link last night. There was a great article called Diamonds Are Bullshit. And it covered the manufactured demand that De Beers Diamonds in 1938 found that only 15% of American men were buying engagement rings. And it was a dwindling trend. It was not common at that time. It was not pervasive the way it is now for every single man to give his woman an engagement ring, a diamond engagement ring. And even though only 15% of men in America did it, that made up 75% of De Beers customers and their sales. So 15% of all men in America were – they constituted 75% of De Beers sales. And De Beers realized that the only way to grow is to manufacture this demand. And so they began the greatest marketing campaign outside of religion that has ever been undertaken, and really sort of have convinced the world, not just Americans, but not just Western society, but all societies, that it's this rite of passage as a man that when you want to get engaged, you buy your woman a big diamond ring and you spend a fair amount of money on it. And, you know, so the article really sort of like laid waste to that idea, and you know, even talked about how diamonds are not a good investment and they're not really a precious commodity. They're not even that rare. The only reason they seem rare is because De Beers owns all these mines and these distributors, and they sort of choke the supply so they can inflate demand. And if you just, you know, I'm not saying not to buy your wife a diamond engagement ring. I bought Nagar a very nice diamond ring when I was proposing to her, because like whether or not it is manufactured, there is still this social expectation, and I don't have a problem fulfilling that to make someone happy. But it's just these are things to be aware of. So for me, it's very much about you know, like looking at things as objectively and honestly as I can. Every item in my house has a purpose, or I don't want it there. I'm trying to find a way to get rid of it. And when you do that, you're not compelled to buy more things. And most importantly, you are compelled to find uses for things. And you start to take this really critical eye to everything in your life. And it helps with, you know, exercise. It helps with diet. You know, like when you go to the supermarket, we all fucking do this, especially if you shop at Whole Foods. You know, everyone likes to make that joke where they call Whole Foods whole paycheck because it costs so much money. The thing that costs a lot of money at Whole Foods for me has not been the food that I need. It's the food that looks interesting, so I buy it. And so now when I food shop, I really try to take this conscious approach. Like, do I really need this? Do I really want this? Do I need to eat it? Like, do I want to taste this item, or do I want to eat this item regularly? And you know, like, just looking at things through that lens has saved me hundreds of dollars every shopping trip at Whole Foods. And, you know, you just have to be really aware of these things. So again, my rule for myself is don't own a lot of things except books and things you use. And, you know, the fewer things you use, the fewer things you should own. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I hope the audience was paying attention for that one, because like I said, it just kind of like makes your life a little bit less stressful sometimes. And just play around. Mm-hmm. Sell some stuff that you don't need and see how you feel, and then go from there.
Yeah.
All right, so Adam, I want to talk to you a little bit about getting into the fitness industry. We got like four questions about this. It's a question that we get a lot, and since you're kind of like knee deep into it, I wanted to ask you if you have any tips for people that are trying to kind of get noticed. And John, I know you help out a lot of trainers with this as well, so I'd love for you to follow up after Adam.
So, are we just talking about starting, or are we talking about building your brand and getting in magazines and something flashy like that?
I like part two.
Part two? Yeah. In all honesty, it depends on the medium that you want. So, if you want to write, or you want to write for a magazine, before you even do it, kind of hone your craft. Figure out what you are really good at and get really good at that. Mm-hmm. And that's the basis of everything. You know, any type of editor or someone who's creating content is looking for good original ideas from people that can have kind of proof of concept. So I know that there's a lot of talk about in the fitness industry of when someone can be writing a blog, or when someone can be creating content, or when they can be, you know,
do we have a date on that? Because people seem to get really mad about that sometimes.
People do get really mad about that. And you know what? That's people. Honestly, it's people getting mad for people getting mad. I'm not going to sit here and be like, you know what? You've only been in the fitness industry for a couple years, so therefore I'm going to determine that you shouldn't have your own business, or you shouldn't make money, or you shouldn't be contributing to a magazine, because people's knowledge can accelerate at different ideas. I mean, come on. If that wasn't the case, Doogie Howser would have never existed. And let's be honest, Doogie Howser was pretty awesome.
It's a great show right there.
It is a wonderful show. You have people who learn and can help people at different stages. It'd be no different than saying that, you know, Roman at 30 years old shouldn't have a book deal or be able to reach so many people because he's only 30 years old. But if that information can help someone, are we really going to punish someone because of their age or because of a perceived lack of experience? I don't buy into that. I do, however, buy into the idea that, you know, you don't want to just make shit up for a lack of better purposes. I mean, you should learn from people. If you are going and you are learning from great mentors, or you are working with hundreds or thousands of clients, and that happens at an accelerated pace, good for you for being a hustler. And then good for you for wanting to hustle and then have that information reach more people. So it really starts with an idea or an ability to help people, or a proof of concept where you know you can help people, or you've seen in working with people that there's a major flaw. And, you know, sometimes the best thing that can happen is that we just open up conversation. A lot of people have issue with me because I take the counterintuitive approach of not being dogmatic. I'm going to write about a lot of different things, kind of promote conversation, because that's really what we need in this industry. And by promoting conversation on the right topics, drown out a lot of the BS that hurts our industry, because there is a lot more BS than there is good information. So in order to make sure that you can drown out that BS, make sure that you have good information. Once you have that good information, it's about finding a way that you can share that information. You have a lot of smart people in the fitness industry who have these good ideas, and the reason why they're never sharing them is because they don't hone that craft. They don't either work on their writing or find their voice or practice it in the way that they would practice being a trainer. You know, at the end of the day, you can have a great idea in a magazine, might want to publish it, but if you want the byline to be yours, if you want your name to be writing articles, the editor doesn't want to have to rewrite every single thing that you do. And that's the case at some magazines, but to really kind of build up an equity and trust with any of these publications, it's to have great ideas and then be able to share those ideas in a way that are very, very helpful. And there are two ways that you can really do this easily. One is to understand the voice of a magazine. You know, if you are sending me a pitch, I want to know exactly what, you know, where you think this should go in the magazine. I want to see some sort of representative voice that shows that you read the magazine and you understand the reader. Because rule number one of being an editor is know your audience. So if you're writing to me making a pitch and it's clear you don't know my audience, it really shows that you didn't put the time and effort and thought into making this happen. So I think you want to start with understanding that audience and then really understanding the type of content that is going to benefit those people. So hone your craft, practice writing, make sure that when you make that pitch, it is catered to the audience and you understand the audience of the publication, and then just be patient. I mean, Roman is the best example that, you know, he was relentless for a year in knowing that he had good ideas, he had good thoughts, and he stayed in contact with me, and it paid off. And I thought Roman was very, very smart. And in some of these publications, it just takes a while to break in, and that's the reality of it. And if you're someone who's going to take a rejection as I can't do this, or, you know, forget this editor, they suck, that's a mentality that isn't going to get anywhere. Understand that these editors get hundreds of emails every day. They get tons of pitches. And if you persevere through there and you stay patient, you keep on firing away good ideas, the cream does eventually rise to the top. And sometimes that's really the end game. It's just kind of the survival of the fittest attitude of, I know I have good information, so I'm going to keep on working on this. I'm going to be patient. And I know eventually it's going to break through.
Yeah, that's all great stuff. If I can add to that, I'm definitely I'm one of those people who gets mad at people who get mad about like young guns like coming up in the industry, and because nothing infuriates me more than when people like dogmatically cling to anything, because I really think that the learning like that's like saying that there are still 6 degrees of separation between everyone. The internet has changed the motherfucking game. Now it's like 3 degrees of separation. Think about that. There is literally an 100% increase in the likelihood that you're going to know someone that knows someone that knows this person, this random stranger in front of you, because of the internet. Everything has gotten smaller and bigger at the same time. It shouldn't – if you're a trainer starting out and you're in the second year of your career, you better be far and away better than I was year two of my training career. Add to that the fact that it doesn't take everyone the same amount of time to get to a certain level of proficiency. It just doesn't. It doesn't at all. Every single year in the NFL, in the Pro Bowl, there are rookies. There are rookies in the Pro Bowl. There are rookies in the All-Star game. These things happen. Sometimes some guys just get there quicker than others.
All right, let's talk about some fitness stuff. We got a lot of questions from people directed into that category. So we did get a couple questions about your recent blog post about EDT, John. So like I said, you recently had a blog post about escalating density training. Yep. For those that are unfamiliar with the concept, can you explain the concept and sure. how you like to set it up differently than, you know, kind of what Staley had in his book sure. all those years back?
So Charles Staley invented EDT training. I learned about it on T Nation and it was awesome. And I was primarily using it for muscle gain. The theory being that, you know, doing more work in less time or more work in the same amount of time, which is really the Staley's model. If you kept your rest period short, you would eventually increase work capacity so that you can actually, you know, let's say you're doing the 6-week program and, you know, you have like your 10 RM with a barbell curl, let's say, is 100 pounds. And you try and do as many curls as possible in this 10-minute window. And, you know, maybe week one, you're going to get, you know, 150 curls. And then week six, you know, you're getting like 210 curls. And so you've increased your volume because you've managed to increase density. And that promotes muscle growth. It's really, really effective. I started looking at it for fat loss because I noticed that whenever I did it, I was able to get leaner. And so really what I've done is I've looked at exercises and I've set up density circuits. So, you know, non-competing exercise, you know, 3 to 5 exercises, you know, squat, lunge, push, pull type thing. And I have assigned a time frame to each type of exercise. And then I've also laid out an outline for how long you should rest between exercises of different types. And so in the initial iteration of that, what I was doing was just having people you know, going through and then trying to do more work in that second round. So, you know, you do your squat, your lunge, your push, your pull, your plank or whatever. And that would be your first circuit. And you would have, you know, you'd record your weights, record, you know, each one of those things would be done for time. So you'd record the total number of reps that you would do. And then the second circuit, you would simply try to beat that. Or if you only perform the circuit once, you would try to beat those number of reps on subsequent training sessions. And what I found was that people were beating their weights 100% of the time. And so I was like, okay, well, what if we made it a little bit harder and we took advantage of some cool neurological stuff that happens when you go from set to set, you know, just like, you know, neural activation, neurological junction, and a number of other things that, you know, smarter guys can tell you about. And so what if we increase the weight for the second set? And what I did was increase weight anywhere from 5 to 10%. So sometimes that's pretty significant. And the goal for the client is to do more reps on the second set using more weight than they did on the first set. And that happens probably starting around the fourth session. It happens like 1 out of 4 workouts, which is pretty significant if you think about it. And then, of course, there are ways to do it to ensure that you hit that marker where you start to use like your first set is more of a working warm-up and a primer, and so you pace yourself on that one. But anyway, it's just been this really, really effective way to train that I really love, and I think that people have gotten great results from. It's a lot of fun because it's challenging, and it adds this cool self-motivating density spin to fat loss training, which I think is really great because that's kind of like my bread and butter. I help people get shredded, and it's really fun to be able to do it with you know, take something I learned from a guy like Staley 10 years ago, which really helped me, and be able to pay that forward and have, you know, all these trainers across the country and across the world telling me that they took that article and that they're using it and with their clients and themselves. And that's really it's really flattering.
Very cool. And hopefully, you know, some of that stuff going to be part of the program in the book as well. Is that something that people are going to be able to play around with?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a couple of different styles of training, and their density is one of them. And there's actually 4 weeks of straight density training. So I think that it's the first time I've ever set up a program to have a long block of density training like that. So when we put our test subjects through that second phase where they're doing density shit, I mean, it was just – people just blew up. And they were still in a fat loss protocol, but like arms got bigger, shoulders got like denser, guys like legs just got rock hard. And so, you know, and they were just primed for growth. And then when they jumped into the muscle gaining portion, which is phase 3, they just like fucking exploded and they loved it. It was great. Like they were just – it really is a nice – progressive way to do things.
Very cool. Adam, I want to throw it back to you because like I said, I'm kind of using you as my radar for the fitness world, because like you said, you kind of put your hands in a lot of different pots. In terms of going into 2013, what kind of trends are you seeing in the industry that you really like, and what are some of them that you're just like, this is just BS and it's just like hurting people more than helping them?
You know what? It's funny, but because I think the answer to both of those, it's two sides of the same exact coin. And one, what I'm really starting to see is that people are starting to get away from trying to find that magic bullet solution. And it's been something that I think has really, if you will, it's kind of doomed our industry for a long period of time, where you had everyone who is from, you know, the low carb to the high fat to the high protein to those who do, you know, just lift weights, or those who just do cardio, or now, you know, those in CrossFit or paleo. And you know, what's kind of refreshing is a lot of the thought leaders coming forward and just trying to say that a lot of things work, which everyone knows, because throughout time, you know, whether you're looking at a bodybuilder split or you're looking at a whole body split, we know that a lot of things work. I mean, there's more than enough evidence, but we also oftentimes get bogged down into this nature of we just tell ourselves that there only has to be this one approach that works. So there only has to be this one type of diet. And that's not good. And it's starting to get to that point where we're trying to create plans that are more flexible and more sustainable. It's really what we tried to do with Engineering the Alpha, which is obviously we're going to have a bias towards what we think works best, both on the exercise side and on the diet side. But you can create templates and you can create protocols that are flexible in nature that allow people to eat some of the foods that they like or exercise in a way that will benefit them while still adhering to the principles that we think work best. Because that's the reality. Everyone should have an opinion on what they're preaching. That's what makes you an expert, per se, in the industry. But at the same time, you shouldn't be so dogmatic in your view that to say that your solution is the only one that works or that you can't adapt your approach to a way that will fit and help more people. And I think when people open up to that reality, it removes part of that psychological barrier of, oh, I've tried this before, it doesn't work, so therefore nothing is going to work for me because I've been told this is what's true. That's part of the big myth. And on the flip side, it's those people who are still adhering to this, you know, mentality of this is the only way to go about it. These are the only foods that you can eat. There is nothing else that works. And I'm not calling out paleo people here, but I mean, for instance, there are those that, you know, follow the paleo movement and it works great for them. And you know what? It helps a lot of people. But if you're a paleo person and then you see someone who's not following a paleo type approach and you just start condescending or acting like these people have no idea what's going on or they're stupid or they're going to get some terrible disease and yet they're completely healthy, you're just denying the facts that are right in front of them. We don't need to necessarily fit everyone into some box. We should all be kind of taking the same angle where we're trying to create the best options possible, knowing that there are good options. Let's whittle this down from the 5,000 things that everyone is saying on the internet or in gyms. Whittle it down to the 5, 6, 7, 8 that actually work, and then allow people to find a way to choose and adapt it to them. And I think that's the next iteration of where we have to take the industry, where we kind of band together and get people moving towards those solutions. And we know that there's trial and error. We know that there is an individual aspect to every type of program that you go into that some might work better for other people. And if we can adapt in that way, we're going to allow a lot more people to, I think, be positive about this, see a lot more results and stick with this. Whereas we know the drop-off rate with fitness and diet is typically really high. And it's because we make it seem a little bit too inclusive, or we make it seem like this is the only way that things can happen.
John, did you have anything to add to that?
Word.
Okay, perfect. I like it. So let's talk about another subject that is part of the book, but also something that you've been hitting on in your blog post, John. And that's, you know, I'll use the direct quote. Studies show that over 20% of men are experiencing a declining interest in sex. This means 1/5 of guys are experiencing low sex drive. That's not just statistically significant, it's an epidemic and it's awful. So, you know, again, this book is kind of geared towards that question a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what guys can do, like if they think their testosterone might be low and what steps they should probably take?
Well, the first thing that we want everyone to do, and again, you know, we really want to use our platform to make this like sort of public service announcement that like everyone should get tested. You know, go to your doctor, get some blood tests. It might cost you $100, but you know, that's that's the best $100 you could spend this year. You know, like just get your testosterone levels checked, because knowing where you are is vitally important to figuring out how you can get to where you want to be. And, you know, the thing about testosterone levels is that the range for what's called normal is huge. It's like from like, you know, 230 nanograms per deciliter or whatever it is, all the way up to like, you know, like 900, 800 in that area, which means that like if you're a guy who has 250 nanograms per deciliter and there's someone who has 750 nanograms per deciliter, then that person has three times as much test as you and you're both considered normal, which is not really a good example because you're comparing yourself to someone else. Here is the scary part. What if you're someone like me who historically has had very high testosterone and you're normally up at 750 and then you find yourself down at 250? Now you are operating at like 1/3 capacity, and that's something that needs to be addressed. But you can't get a prescription, and your doctor will just tell you that that's normal because you're still within this range of normal. And that is a really frightening thing. Your testosterone levels could drop by half or 2/3, And as long as you're below this arbitrary or above this arbitrary threshold, you are still considered normal, even though you're operating at one third of what used to be. And so what I would say is, if you are not experiencing problems with sex drive, if you are not experiencing any of the symptoms of low testosterone, like lack of sleep, lack of motivation, lack of ambition, lack of sex drive, hard time gaining muscle, easy time getting fat, even if you – or especially if you're not experiencing those things, please get your testosterone levels checked and record those numbers somewhere. And then if ever you start feeling those symptoms, get your testosterone levels checked again and check them against your baseline, and you will probably find that they have dropped significantly. So that's the first thing, you know. Those are the symptoms, and that's the solution to figuring out where you are. The larger question, of course, is why are men's testosterone levels dropping? Why is it that all men are subject to this? Whereas, you know, low testosterone used to be the province of middle age, and it used to be, you know, guys in their 30s like us, but also in, you know, mostly in their 40s and 50s who are experiencing these things. And that is reflected in certain marketing. If you've ever watched TV during football, you know, you see the commercials and there's all these pharmaceutical companies who are trying to sell you these low T products, you know, these creams and these gels. And the guy in the commercial is always like a good looking older guy, salt and pepper hair. And so it seems to me that even the pharmaceutical companies, who are seriously the only companies who seem to be concerned with this, even they are still operating under the assumption that this is a problem for older guys. Whereas we have seen in over 300 interviews for this book that this problem happens to guys as young as, you know, 22. There's a nation of 22-year-old guys out there who have beautiful girlfriends, sleep next to them in bed every night, and have sex twice a month. And that's not normal, and it's not healthy, not for your own self-esteem, not for your girlfriend's self-esteem, not for your relationship. And it's this really, really huge problem that we want people to take advantage of. I tell my story in some of the bonus chapters for the book where I went through a period of low testosterone, and it lasted close to a year. And I was dating a wonderful girl, and, you know, we stopped having sex, which – and if you guys know anything about me and you have like this generally – you know, like you guys know my image and my – I'm generally perceived as sort of like a hyper-sexed guy. You know that my sex drive is like a big part of who I am. And, you know, I had no sex drive with this beautiful girlfriend who I didn't sleep with. We eventually grew apart. It killed it. You know, no sex means no intimacy. No intimacy means no relationship. You know, eventually grew apart. And, you know, we eventually broke up. And you know, like that sucked. It's like, you know, I believe now in retrospect that relationship would have ended for other reasons. But at the time, the idea that I like was not interested in having sex and that killed this thing was devastating. And like there's a lot of guys who have confided in us now that we've put some of this information out there that they're experiencing similar things, you know, like, and it's something that we want to help with. So we outline strategies in terms of the diet and the training to help with this. So the first thing is to get checked. The second thing is to address your diet. You know, I recommend that everyone go pretty low carb for about a month because insulin acts as an antagonist to both testosterone, but more specifically to growth hormone, which acts to potentiate testosterone, and increase fat. Drop carbs and increase fat. Healthy fats, saturated, grass-fed, all that, you know, whatever dietary you know, religion you follow, whether it's paleo or you know, you're pescatarian, eat more healthy fats. Make sure you're getting enough sleep. You know, they're very, very basic tips. You know, we get into really stark detail in the book, but it, you know, here I'll just give you basic tips. More sleep. A big tip is to have sex more often. The more often you have sex, the higher your testosterone levels will be. If you are not with a partner and you're not frequently having sex, you can masturbate more often. But I will warn that one of the things that contributes to low sex drive is watching too much porn. And the reason for that is it sort of desensitizes you. You know, if you watch really fucked up porn with like five girls going at it, and then, you know, like it, and that's what like you sort of condition yourself to be turned on by, And then there's like one girl in front of you, and like in the back of your mind, even though you're not going to be thinking this consciously, you're going to be excited that this girl is in front of you. In the back of your mind, your subconscious, your sex drive is going to be like, well, where are the other four girls? And that's really damaging. So if you are going to use masturbation as a tool to increase testosterone, I would offer the caveat that you should not watch porn that often, and you know, just try to use your imagination, kind of thing. So this is these, you know, and I know it sounds like I'm joking. I'm telling you to have more sex and to jerk off, but these are like serious tips. Like that helps a lot. And you know, I detail in the book sort of my climb back into the saddle, as it were. And I'm happy to report that my testosterone levels and my sex drive are, you know, not as high as they were when I was 23, but they're still pretty damn high, especially for a guy my age. And I would like to keep them there. And I would like for you to keep them there. I would like for no one to experience low sex drive and low self-esteem and low confidence. And instead, I want guys who are even in the 500 or 600 range to be able to increase these things. So that's my public service announcement. Please get checked. I promise if you get checked and post your numbers on our Facebook pages, we'll send you some tips to help out. And it's in the book as well.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate that this is really it is a call to action, because I think, you know, there are a lot of ideas that kind of pass by my desk and a lot of things that would make a great article as opposed to, say, a great book. And part of what went into deciding to write this book was obviously the fat loss programs and the muscle building programs and the bigger idea. But one of those bigger ideas is, once I really started digging in and doing some research on some of Roman's theories, is that this is an epidemic. It's a very, very serious problem that the average testosterone of the average male has dropped significantly. And the average testosterone of the older male has dropped, and the average testosterone of the younger male has dropped. And researchers even come out to show, it was Australian researchers were showing that your testosterone levels don't have to naturally plummet. That there are guys in their 60s, you know, they had more than 1,000 people in this study. They showed that if they were eating right and following certain lifestyle habits, taking certain supplements and keeping fat levels down, that their testosterone levels were just as high as guys in their 30s. So the impetus behind this is that your testosterone, your hormonal levels impact everything, literally everything, without you even realizing it. If you're busting your ass in the gym, and you're not gaining muscle, it might not be that you're following a crappy program. You might have a testosterone issue, just as if you're feeling lethargic or you're feeling tired. And when we really started tapping into this, that foundational problem was that guys didn't even realize that they had these hormonal issues, and at any age, and regardless of what age you're at, you can take this natural approach. You know, it doesn't have to be that pharmaceutical approach to have a significant impact on changing your testosterone levels, and then from there on forth, everything gets better. And that's why, you know, that call to get tested, to get checked, is so important and can really almost take away some of that stress and anxiety of why you don't feel a certain way, why you don't have energy, why you're not more successful. And it allows you to start attacking the problem and start fixing your life.
Final question, and Adam, I want to pose this to you first. You know, first off, you know, Should women be interested in picking this book up? Is there something in there that, you know, women can, you know, get out of checking this stuff out in there, besides like kind of buying it for their boyfriend who's just been like sitting on his ass all day?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely information in for women. We will say that we are writing a second book, a complimentary one that is geared directly for women. But the workouts in here, a lot of the information there is applicable to women, but we are going to cater one more specifically. I would say, and it's much to the tone that you said, for a lot of women, it is about buying it for the man in their life, or for men that they know. You know, my younger brother Jordan, his girlfriend Kayla, who's now getting a shout out on here, she bought it for her father. I mean, it's just that this is a serious issue, and that if you're a woman, guys are inherently stubborn. I think we can all agree about this. And a lot of times, you know, the best way to go about it is to get it from someone who cares about you and just kind of give them that nudge and put that book in front of them, because you read chapter one, and literally we get into it right in chapter one. We pretty much lay it all on the line and lay out the consequences and let you recognize that a lot of things that you might not realize are there are affecting you. This is the reality of that situation. So women quit that out, pick it up. But at that same time, I say the women's book will probably tap into their hormonal issues more specifically from the female gender perspective.
If I could just add something to that, guys, this is Roman here. As a guy who has been reading Cosmo for years for a little bit of insight into the fairer sex, I will say that there, you know, as a woman, whether you're single or you're in a serious relationship or even married, I would say that, you know, you're going to be interested in some of the stuff in the book from sort of that, like, you know, that voyeuristic psychological perspective where you just kind of like want to know what dudes are thinking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not one of those, you know, he's just not that into you type books, but I do think that there's stuff there that will give you sort of some insight into why us big dumb animals are such big dumb animals.
Yeah, and it might also explain why, and something that Roman and I talk about a lot, there are a lot of guys in relationships, and more importantly, a lot of women in relationships who feel bad or no longer feel they're beautiful because, for instance, they're not having sex in their relationship. And it'd be good for them to even understand that some of these things really aren't their fault. Mm-hmm. And if their significant other is telling them, hey, I just don't have sex drive and it's got nothing to do with you, it literally has nothing to do with them. It is a physiological problem that are affected by lifestyle factors. And in terms of quality relationship and moving forward, it's important to understand that sometimes there are underlying causes to these problems that do cause fractures in relationships that are perceived to be one thing when they're something completely different.
Yeah.
Well, guys, the one question we did get on Twitter was something along the lines of why should I buy this book? You know, once I've checked out your other training programs, I just want to let people know, like, the book is $16 on Amazon. It's not like you're dropping $50, or it's not like $100 for a book. We're talking about $16 for the book on Amazon, ship free to your door, or the right. Kindle version for like $12.50. And like you guys said, the audio book should be coming out around that time. As well, so it's really not a bad trade-off, and you probably blew more money, like Roman said, in Whole Foods this past weekend on crap that you didn't need. So definitely, well, go ahead.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, there's the price. It's $16 for a great book. There's a couple of reasons you should buy it. One, because it can help you, and I think that's valuable. I think it's worth $16 to pick up a book, an actual hardcover book from the bookstore that will help you. Two, because it's a good book. It is really well written. It's entertaining. There are some parts that, you know, the when, you know, we've got our review copies last week, so we've sent them out to a few people, and Kevin will be sending you one. You know, like, people are hurt, you know, they send me texts and they're like, wow, this, you know, this part right here was like laugh out loud funny. I really enjoyed that. And that example was really, really drove the point home. So it's an entertaining read. I mean, if you like my stuff and Adam's stuff, like, it's fun. It's a fun book. The third reason is that you care about the fitness industry. I think we can all agree, you know, we have a mutual friend in Tony Gentlecore who, like, seems to have this, like, real big problem with Tracy Anderson and all the stuff she spouts out. And I get that, you know, like, Tracy's, like, trying to help people, and maybe she doesn't know better, or maybe she does know better and she just, you know, like, doesn't care. Whatever it is, I think that we can agree that the quote-unquote TV trainers are not – they're in a position to help people, to help not only the individual clients who they're serving and the thousands upon thousands of viewers. They're also in a position to push the industry forward, to use their position to put great information out there that can help the masses. And most of them choose not to do it. You know, an exception to this, by the way, is Tony Horton, who I think for fat loss, for metabolic resistance training, puts out a ton of good stuff. So they're not all like that. But the fact is that Adam and I have great content, and we are representatives. We are the avatars of this industry in the sense that while I'm not the best trainer in the world, I am friends with the guys who are. I am networked with the Brett Contreras's and you know – the Alan Aragons and the Eric Cressys and the Mike Boyles. And I would – if you care about the fitness industry, you have a vested interest in making this book successful so that the platform for for pushing out good information, the right information, grows. And then we can elevate those people. We can help to do that. And the fourth reason you should buy it is honestly for that very reason, in sort of a more directed way, to help us get on the New York Times bestseller list. I would really, really like that for me personally. It'd be a nice sort of like lifelong dream for me. But it would also make my mom happy and Adam's mom happy, which would be a lot of fun. And it would make us feel justified for having, you know, like bled on pages for 5 months. I slept on Adam's couch for 5 months while we wrote this book. And that's true. It was hard. You know, Adam's wife had to put up with me. So it wasn't an easy ride. But more importantly, helping this book get on the New York Times bestseller list is good for the industry. It really is. I promise you that when you read the book, and I think you should, you'll see that if this information, if the stuff in the book can hit the mainstream, millions of people will be helped. What I would like is for the information in this book to take on a life of its own. You know, there are people out there who have never read The Atkins Diet. They've never read that book or picked it up or own it, but they know what a low-carb diet is, and they sort of have a general idea of why they should be doing one, right? At least according to that, to the you know, the Atkins theories. I would like some of the stuff in the book, you know, whether it's the density training or the hormone manipulation or the intermittent fasting. I would like these things to take on a life of their own so that people who never read the book still know what they are and are still actively trying to employ them and make them part of a healthy lifestyle. But the only way that's going to happen, the only way that 10 years from now, someone who has never read The Engineering the Alpha will talk about intermittent fasting or hormone manipulation is if everyone gets on board now and buys a copy or buys two copies, one for you, one for your dad, or one for you, one for your brother, and helps us. And so this is a call to action, and I'm really appealing to your self-interest, but I'm also asking for a favor. So please do me a favor. When Kevin posts this interview, I'm sure there'll be a link to buy. I would love if you clicked add to cart because we really do need your support. And I think that once we have the success that we're aiming for, you'll see that we're going to do some good with it.
And if you just need a little bit more reason, we also happen to have 16 weeks of workouts in there and 16 weeks of planned out diet for you and 11 myths that are just probably killing your progress. And so much humor and pop culture that you will walk away and just be way cooler at every single party and social event that you ever go to.
True story.
I think the audience is sold. I am going to double dip and also pick up the audiobook.
Oh, nice.
Just because that's kind of like how I like to roll. I like to listen in the car and stuff like that. And I want the... inflection of the words and things.
That's really funny. Like when I've never heard of an audiobook for like a fitness book.
Yeah.
So when Adam and I got to the studio, we're like, who the fuck is going to listen to this? So you're the guy, you're the reason that we filmed this so that you can listen. That's great. At least now I feel like it wasn't a waste of time. Thank you for your support and for picking it up, man. That means a lot.
Of course. Maybe people can throw it in before, you know, on their way to the gym to do the program, just get a little, you know, pumped up a little bit, understand why exactly they're going in there to lift the iron. So
for sure that makes a lot of sense.
That actually makes me feel that Roman should have read chapter one in his Michael Caine voice. Now
I should have.
Yeah, you didn't do the voices for all the characters in the book or anything like that.
Yeah, we tried a few accents, but the director was just like, unless you're going to do it for the whole book, you can't do it.
Yeah, listen, the director was like, I've won a Grammy for doing this before, so just trust me. And he, that's all he had to say. I was sold.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he won a Grammy, so I got nothing.
All right, everyone, that is it for this show. Hopefully you're going out there and you're picking up the book. You are clicking on that button to get your copy delivered to your door, downloaded to your Kindle or to your iPod. And guys, thank you very much. It's always great to talk to you. It was a lot of fun, and I will definitely catch up down the road.
Thanks so much for having us, Kevin.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.